This is Digital Story Podcast number 868, November 8th, 2022. Today's theme is Fujifilm muscles up with the new X-T5. I'm Derek Story. Yes, the Fujifilm X-H2 and X-H2S are great cameras for those who need those capabilities, and maybe for those who like that form factor. But for many of us who are more straight photography oriented, the original X series is what caused us to fall in love with the brand in the first place. And now with the announcement of the X-T5, that affair continues. We'll take a look at the new 40 megapixel wonder, plus more stories on today's TDS Photography Podcast. I hope you enjoy the show. Well, to say this camera has been warmly received, I think would be a bit of an understatement, both by reviewers and by potential users alike. It has a lot going for it. One of the things that it has going for it is that it feels like one of the original X-T cameras. They didn't goof it up, but yet they added a lot of great stuff under the hood. They made some physical adjustments. Let's take a look at the highlights right now, and then we'll talk a little bit more about some of the nuances as well. Well, the headliner has to be the 40 megapixel APS-C X-Trans CMOS BSI sensor. This sensor, 40 megapixels, so you got plenty of resolution. If you like X-Trans, which many of us do, and the way that it works with Fuji's Color Science, then this one is going to be a winner. You're going to get fast performance as well, autofocusing. This is a nice sensor that I think a lot of folks were hoping that they would get that bump in resolution. It's no slouch at video either. 4K 120p, 6.2K at 30p, 10-bit video. So if you need to shoot some serious video, you can do that with this camera. 7-stop in-body image stabilization. Oh, I love in-body stabilization. And up to 7 stops, I should say. Probably most of the time you're going to be around the 4 to 5 stop area, but there are some lens and sensor combinations where you can get up to 7 stops. 425-point intelligent hybrid AF system. It should focus nicely. I'll just leave it at that. You got a beautiful OLED, 3.69 million dot OLED electronic viewfinder. I haven't had a chance to look through this viewfinder yet, but boy, it sounds good. A 3-inch, 1.8 million dot tilting touchscreen. We're going to talk more about the touchscreen in just a few moments because they reverted back to the kind that I like. Let's put it that way. 20 frames per second electronic shutter, 15 frames per second mechanical shutter. They've improved the Bluetooth and Wi-Fi connectivity. My X100V has pretty good Wi-Fi and Bluetooth connectivity, but maybe some of the earlier, like the XT3 and 4, might have been lacking a bit in that area. They feel like they shored it up. ProRes and Blackmagic RAW via HDMI, again for the video folks. 160 megapixel pixel shift multi-shot. And that's where 40 megapixels isn't enough for you. Well, we can get you some more. All right. Lots of stuff. Now, what I'd like to do is just read you a little bit about one of the reviewers who had a pre-production model and wrote a nice little bit on B&H Explora. So, and I have the link in the show notes, and then I'm going to chime in. I'm going to piggyback on a couple of those comments. But let me read you what he says first. So he's talking about the specs and he goes, all of this is fine, but there are 2.5 changes that I really noticed in my week of use. The first is a more robust grip. Rather than the gradual slope of the X-T4, the hand rests along a steep wall that may not be much deeper than its predecessor, but feels more secure in the hand. It was the first thing that I noticed when I picked the camera up, and it's felt good every time since. The other change is one that I'm personally more conflicted about, but it's also something others will undoubtedly celebrate. That'd be me. The removal of the flip-out variangle screen. That particular feature is now the exclusive domain of the XH series, where the functional benefit for video types like him will be more universally worth the usability downgrade for photo types like me. Now, he's speaking right here. I was content to make the trade-off with the X-T4, the variangle, but I know many resented it, and those folks will be quite happy with Fujifilm's return to the three-way tilt mechanism of the X-T3. This means that you get your high and low angle photography without affecting the camera's rotational center of gravity. You don't need to compensate for the additional weight sticking out the left side, and you do feel that in your day-to-day. Additionally, that third tilt is where the screen completely detaches on one side from the main mechanism, giving additional flexibility while shooting off-angle portraiture. I love the screen. I mean, I have that screen on my GFX 100S, and I just think it is so cool. It's so smart. I mean, sometimes I just, you know, when I'm just fiddling around waiting for something to upload or something, I just fiddle with that screen, and you know, it's almost like a toy back there. I guess I should be careful and make sure that I, you know, don't break it or anything, although it looks pretty robust. Anyway, I'm digressing here. Two more little paragraphs here. Okay, the biggest change to the X-T5 isn't visible. The X-T5 looks just like its predecessor, but it is a milestone in APS-C engineering. The 40 megapixel sensor means a massive 53% jump in pixel count, marking the largest increase the line has ever seen and may ever see. In fact, the X-Tran 5 sensor is the highest resolution APS sensor on the market, period. I love my X-T4 the same way I love my X-T3 before it and the X-T2 before that. But once again, Fujifilm has come out with a camera that has made me take a long, hard look at the credit limit on my PayBu card. Darn it, I think they've got me again. I just thought that I cherry-picked those paragraphs there because, to me, they really summed up the difference with this camera when you compare it to its predecessor. They return to the flip screen that, you know, many of us like better. You've got the state-of-the-art sensor, this 40-megapixel sensor. The camera is a little bit more squared up looking, which personally I like. I'm not as crazy about the over-rounded corners and the sloping shoulders and all that kind of stuff. I like a nice tall camera, and this feels that way. And then, of course, there's all the other little things that happen underneath the hood. And here's the cool thing. All of this that we're talking about, the body is going to be available brand new in US dollars for $1,699. That just feels like a really good price for this camera. It really feels competitive. They're going to begin shipping on November 17th. You can pre-order your copy right now, your camera right now. I have a link to it in the show notes. If you're thinking about buying it from B&H, which is where that link is to, I'd appreciate it if you click on that link in the show notes. That's an affiliate link and it helps me out. I'm thrilled for Fujifilm X-T shooters. I think they're absolutely going to love this one. OM Digital Solutions is removing the Olympus name from its entire product portfolio. And you can read this entire article on DP Review. I just thought this was interesting. I knew on new stuff going forward that it was going to go to OM, but no. They're going to rebrand everything that comes out the factory door. Let me read you what DP Review has to say about this. Last year, OM Digital Solutions announced it would gradually transition from using the name Olympus, branding it acquired, to its own OM system brand it developed. Now that transition is getting fast-tracked just a week after OMDS announced the first interchangeable lens camera bearing its new OM system name, the OM5. In a press release posted to its Japanese website, OMDS announced it will be replacing the Olympus name on all of its current product lineup with OM system. According to the announcement, the change will impact all products in the OMDS lineup, including cameras, lenses, binoculars, and accessories. Aside from swapping Olympus with OM system, the affected products will otherwise remain unchanged with the original specifications and build quality. The Olympus name has been on various cameras, lenses, and accessories in some form since the 1930s. While the brand and the products bearing its name has seen various owners over the years under the greater Olympus umbrella, this transition to OM system appears to mark the end of a name that has been stamped on cameras of all shapes and sizes for almost a century, including the game-changing OM-1 and its popular Olympus pen lineup. So, oh my gosh. So, on one level, I don't have any strong feelings about this per se. And I knew it was going to happen, like I said earlier, on the new stuff. I'm a little surprised that, lenses that have been around for a while, as new models are made, they're going to have OM system on it. It kind of makes me happy that I bought the OM-1 with the Olympus name on it. I mean, I was actually thinking that at the time, like, how cool is this? This is going to be probably the last camera ever made with Olympus nameplate on the front of it. And I'm kind of happy about some of the Olympus lenses that I have that say Olympus. I mean, it's just a name. We know that, right? It's just a name. But you get attached to names, right? We get attached to names. And I have known this name, Olympus, for decades. So OM system is a little bit of a switch for me. I'm curious as to how other folks are going to react. I might actually put a poll in the next newsletter and see how people feel about this. That'd be kind of fun, wouldn't it? So those of you that subscribe to the Nimble Photographer newsletter, look for that in the next newsletter, and we'll see what other people think. I'm okay with it, but that's only because I already have a bunch of Olympus cameras. Speaking of the new Nimble Photographer newsletter, that comes out every Thursday. I like this newsletter. I'm having fun with it. I like doing a newsletter that's just not the same old thing all the time. Sometimes we have a photo essay. Sometimes we cover a new product. Sometimes we talk about what's going on, right now, this week. Sometimes we do polls. It's just sometimes we embed, audio or video. It's fun. It's fun. And it's kind of fun not knowing exactly what's going to happen from week to week, and it's free. It's free. I mean, how can you miss with this? And as I've talked about before, when things happen after the podcast, I don't have to wait all the way to the next podcast to cover them. I can now cover them in the newsletter. If you're interested in subscribing to this, and why wouldn't you be? Honestly, just use the sign up box that you'll see in the show notes right there. Just enter your email and off to the races you go. And see you next Thursday. I thought this was an interesting piece. Are modern photos too perfect? We've sort of talked about this a little bit off and on. And there are moments where I think that too. But let's see what this person says. So this is an article from F-Stoppers, and I have the link in the show notes. Let me read you a little bit here. We are at a remarkable time in photography. Cameras and lenses are more capable than ever, and we can create images that photographers could only dream of a decade ago. And for the most part, that's a great thing. However, there can be a downside to that. Are images too perfect nowadays? Then it points to a video. This interesting video discusses the idea of reintroducing imperfection to photos. Yeah, it's called film photography. Anyway, I'm sorry. No snarky remarks on this. I think this is an important thing to think about. A lot of photography today places technical perfection at the top of the list of priorities, and no doubt we should not confuse the idea of deliberate imperfection with not processing sound technique. Rather, we should reevaluate if the constant pursuit of technical perfection is hindering us from improving our photos in other ways. After all, there are a lot of photos out there that are clinically sharp with beautiful colors and crisp editing, and yet they are often somehow lacking something, something that makes them compelling, that makes the viewer unable to look away. When our technique is good, it is time to make room for other aspects of image making as well. And then you can check out the video for more information and more thoughts on this topic. Here's the thing on this. Like I said, we've touched on this before. If your only pursuit in photography is to be technically perfect, then I think that's an issue, right? Because I think what's going to happen is that you may have very boring, technically perfect photos. The idea is that what you want to do are create photos that cause, he didn't say it right here, but an emotional response in the viewer. The viewer feels something when they look at one of your best photos. Now, how you execute that to enhance that feeling, that's up to you. That may or may not include technical perfection. Sometimes technical perfection is part of what creates that feeling. Sometimes it isn't. That's where that gray matter between your ears comes into play, right? That's where you have to look at this photo and go, what should I do with this? Maybe I should, have a little fun with it. Maybe I should apply a LUT or, play with the color scheme a bit. Maybe do a teal and orange thing. Whatever it happens to be. I think entertaining the possibility other than technical perfection should be part of the creative process. Now, our iPhone images and our Samsung smartphone camera and our Google Pixel images are very, 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 very good. And I love that because I don't have time to set up, a picture every time. And if something's happening quickly, I like it that I can pull the iPhone out of my pocket, shoot quickly, get the shot, and know that the shot's going to be good. Yay, that's what I want. That's not what I'm shooting all the time. I'm getting ready to get in the car to go to Oregon right now for a photography workshop. Yes, sir. Next week, or as you're listening to this week. And I'm not as concerned about technical perfection. I'm more concerned about how I feel when I look at the photos I capture there. I want a little mess. We're going to be in a messy environment. It's going to be raining. The waves are going to be crashing. There's going to be mist. There's going to be stuff everywhere. How can that stuff create something that people look at and go, wow, that's I really feel like I'm there or something like that. In a way, this headline is like sort of like, are modern photos too perfect? Okay, just take a deep breath, right? Okay, I do like it in the sense that I think it's a question that we need to answer or at least ask ourselves all the time, just to check ourselves to make sure we're not getting too carried away with, image sharpness and resolution and all that stuff, and that we're creating photos that are actually interesting. And for that reason, I do think it's a good post. I'm glad they put it up, and that's why I'm talking about it right now as well. All right, let's do a little virtual camera club news. Lots to talk about this week. First of all, yes, heading to the Oregon coast, we've got a big workshop, probably going to have rain every day. It is going to be exciting. I've got a wonderful lineup, and I just can't wait to get out there with our fellow photographers and get wet and take pictures and then go back. I've got this wonderful, just this really cool place for our headquarters. I mean, you walk out the back door and it's got like its own beach and stuff right on the river there. The inside, you feel like you're in a cozy cabin kind of thing, but there's plenty of room. Oh, it's going to be so much fun. I like it. I like going out and just like getting uncomfortable and making some great shots and then coming back and having a hot cup of coffee and warm up and then enjoy those pictures on my laptop. going, wow, aren't I the adventurer, right? Anyway, so I'll be doing that this week. You're probably going to hear something about that in the newsletter as well. Thursday's newsletter is going to be a blast. Looking forward to seeing everyone who is joining us. We're going to have a great time. Speaking of workshops, wow, we came out with a bang on the 2023 workshop season. The very first workshop, the printing workshop, sold out fairly quickly. I'm probably going to add another one. So if you're disappointed that that workshop sold out so quickly, the online printing workshop, I'm going to figure out a place to shoehorn in another one. And it won't be too long. It won't be too long. We have good uptick on the Sedona and surrounding area workshop, and some great interest in both the Wine Country and the Point Reyes workshop, and then all the other online workshops as well. Everything just is so much fun to see people excited about getting together either online on a weekly basis for the online workshop or getting together physically. I'm so happy about this, and I'm just thrilled with your enthusiasm. We are going to have a great 2023. If you haven't looked at the workshop lineup yet, I encourage you to do so. I have a link in the show notes, or you can just go to thenimblephotographer.com and you'll find the workshops page there. A huge thanks to our Inner Circle members. Our Inner Circle members who also cashed in on sizable discounts during the 2023 workshop season. I love it. I love it. I feel good when, especially longtime Inner Circle members, get a little reward in addition to that warm feeling that you have in your heart for supporting this community and this podcast. That warm feeling is good. This, you know, I'm not going to mince words there. However, discount in addition to the warm feeling might even be a little bit better. Inner Circle members, just thank you for being so active, for helping me shape this workshop season. Your feedback has so much to do with what ended up on the catalog page. And if you want to become an Inner Circle member, join this group and get the discounts, just go to the Patreon tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. And nose around there, and hopefully you will join us sooner than later. And finally, a huge thanks to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. One of the things I talk about with Red River Paper is that you can get all sorts of supplies there. One thing that they don't seem to be carrying anymore, one of the readers wrote me and let me know, thank you very much, that they're not carrying the Epson ink anymore. So just cross that one off. They're not doing that for whatever reason. Next time I talk to Drew, I'm going to find out what's going on with that. However, the one thing we do know they have lots of is paper in all shapes and sizes and all types of surfaces. They're going to be helping us with the upcoming printing workshop. I'm really excited to be working with them on this. If you're interested in getting your inkjet printing on, or if you're signed up for the workshop, you might want to start looking at some paper surfaces right now and get some paper in your hot little hands. Just click on the Red River Paper tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. And remember, they have a great Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And a big thanks to them for supporting this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. The car is packed and I'm ready to head to the Oregon coast early tomorrow morning. Hope you have a great week. Probably won't be as fun as mine. I'm sorry. Come back and join me next week and be sure to check out the newsletter on Thursday. Until then, see you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.